All right. Well, good morning again, everyone. All right. Just don't get up or anything. Take about 30 seconds and talk to your neighbor for just a second. I need to do something quick, so. Oh, you said I should have. I thought I left it on, actually. So, no, I appreciate you talking. That helped me feel a little bit less awkward blowing my nose up here. So, what we're going to start with this morning is an obituary, which is a weird way to start a sermon, I know, but I like to be different. The reason you have in your the title of this is Grieving Memorial Day is because we've tried to, at different points in the year, looking at grief in terms of a certain holiday or an event in the nation. And so at New Year's, we talked about grieving at New Year's and kind of Christmas time and that kind of stuff. At Valentine's, we talked about grieving a loss of a Valentine or different things like that. We've missed a couple here and there just for various reasons, but I wanted to go ahead and take a look at how grief looks in Memorial Day and how really remembering is such an important part of grief. And so we're going to start with this true obituary from a man named William Zegler. All right, so William Zegler escaped this mortal realm on Friday, July 29th in 2016 at the age of 69. And remember what happened in 2016. He says, we think he did it on purpose to avoid having to make a decision in the pending presidential election. He leaves behind four children, five grandchildren, and the potted meat industry, for which he was an unofficial spokesman until his dietary restrictions forced him to eat real food. William volunteered to serve in the United States Navy at the ripe old age of 17 and immediately realized that he didn't like being bossed around, and so he only stuck it out for one war. Before his discharge, however, the government exchanged numerous ribbons and medals for various honorable acts. Upon his return to the city of New Orleans in 1971, thinking it best to keep an eye on him, government officials hired William as a fireman. And after 25 years, William really suddenly realized that running away from burning buildings made a lot more sense than running towards them. He promptly retired. Following his wishes, there will be no service, and this is an actual obituary, so just take it for what it is. Following his wishes, there will not be a service, but well-wishers are encouraged to write a note of farewell on a Schaefer light beer can and drink it in his honor. Unlike previous times, this is not a ploy to avoid creditors or old girlfriends. He assures us that he is gone. He will be greatly missed. And the reason I wanted to start with that, to think about remembering, to think about grieving. Grief is obviously difficult. Obviously, losing someone is challenging and just is a really difficult time in our lives when we have to experience that. But I like this obituary because it offered a certain sense of who he was. I actually intend on writing my own obituary. I haven't done it yet, so hopefully I don't die anytime soon. But if I get the chance to do it, I want to have a bunch of humor in it. I want to have that as part of the experience, because that's a part of who I feel like I am. And I think there's a real life, there's a sense of who he is in that experience. But I also think it's important to start with something like this because it helps us to think about remembering. What do we do? How do we remember? How do we process grief in terms of remembering? And when we think about Memorial Day, we probably have certain thoughts, and especially Memorial Day, we think about our veterans and those that we've lost in wars, and that's a great thing to remember. Those people are worth our time and our effort to remember. But this sermon, I hope, it encompasses any loss that we've had, whether they served in the military, whether it was someone else, a parent or a sibling, a child even, a friend, whoever it's been, and maybe probably multiple people for most of us. What is that? How do we grieve that loss, and how do we remember them in this context, and especially when we celebrate, or we call it a celebration, Memorial Day. And so What I wanted to start with is because I was just ignorant, and when I'm ignorant, I go to the internet, and that's a great place for getting rid of your ignorance, sometimes. And I found this article, and I thought this was helpful, because the lady that I read was as ignorant as I was. And so I'm going to use a lot of her words, but it was where I was at as well. And so this may be where you are as well, looking at what we know about Memorial Day. For a lot of us, most of us think of Memorial Day, we think of it as a day to honor and remember those who died serving our country. Schools are closed, offices are closed, and then there are parades, right? People visit cemeteries, we put flags on gravestones, flags and flowers on gravestones, especially of fallen soldiers. But then there are also sales, right? You go down and get a new car on this weekend, right? There's cookouts. It's the start of the summer celebrations. And for me, and for this article as well, and for maybe a lot of us, that's about it. That's what we know of Memorial Day. And so, because I feel like I like to share information, and this is all free information, I'm not going to charge you as you leave this morning, so pass this on to you as well as far as some of the history of Memorial Day. Memorial Day started has fairly complex roots as far as it was kind of started formally throughout the country. I think Waterloo, Iowa got the official, that's where Memorial Day officially started, but several other places have claimed it as well. It really began, though, as Decoration Day in 1868. And back then it was on May 30th, not on the last Monday, but on May 30th. So it would change the date, day of the week it would be on. And they would go and decorate the graves of fallen soldiers with flowers. Some people say that they chose that date because that's when flowers were in bloom, at the end of May here, the 30th or so. It wasn't until the 1950s, that the tradition of flags on graves began. And then in 1971, the National Holiday Act made Memorial Day the last Monday of May. And then it would create, then obviously, our three-day weekend. And I think this is probably true for me, or what I have understood, and probably what a lot of people would agree, is that when this Decorations Day got moved to the end of the third or the last Monday in May, the fourth Monday in May, was when it started to become a little diluted, when it started to get kind of confused in our minds, because it's so easy to take a three-day weekend and just celebrate summer, right? To spend time as a family, to go and do cookouts, and, you know, we don't have a beach around here, but maybe to the beach and different weekends like that. And that's become so much more about that than it has been about remembering lost ones, remembering fallen soldiers. And so it's become kind of this conflicting message that we've begun to hear. And this author that I read, and what I would believe too, is that I think we would probably get more honor and respect and ability to remember if we had moved it and left it at the 30th. And there are actually those that are trying to push for that, moving away from a three-day weekend to give this holiday a little bit more significance. And again, even if we haven't experienced the loss of someone in the military, even if you don't have friends or family or anyone that has passed away in that way, all of us, I think, this morning have someone we can remember. Someone that in this weekend or tomorrow, today and tomorrow, we can look at and we can remember. And I think that's an important part of this holiday, is that remembering. And we'll talk about some particular things that maybe we can do in this practice. But there are three things that I want us to focus on as far as how we remember or why remembering is important. And the first thing is that we begin to be more thankful. Is that when we remember, we tend to be more thankful. It's so easy to just whine and complain about things, right? I mean, that's just the natural tendency. Something happens or we see something in our country, mostly we want to just complain about it. We want to argue with it. We want to say, well, I don't agree with that or whatever. But when we look back and we think, well, I'm thankful for that. Instead of blaming, instead of complaining, being thankful produces something different in our lives. It produces a positive outlook on the future, not only on the past, but on the future. And so remembering is an opportunity for us to be thankful for things that people have done for us and given to us, and how we can move forward with that as well. The second thing I want us to keep in mind is that remembering helps us to stop or not to repeat the past mistakes. Forgetting, because when we forget the past, it leads to repeating those same mistakes. And so when we remember, we end up doing things differently. Did you get taught that in history class, right? If you don't learn history, that was always my history teacher's push for it. If you don't learn history, you're doomed to repeat it. Is that what they said to you? I don't know that I completely believed it, but anyway, that was their push. But I think it's true in maybe on a national global scale, but I know it's true in my life, Right? If you, and one of the things that we've been working through as leaders and the ladies group has been doing in Sunday school is this emotionally healthy spirituality. And one of the key elements of that is how looking back into your family history in order to see some of the patterns that we fall into. All right, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but think about how you grew up, right? Your parents, your grandparents, and the relationship that you had and the things that they did, especially when they were hurt, right? Especially when there was a loss, especially when there was some grief, right? Some families are ones that yell and scream and throw things, right? And those are I don't know. I just find that those families fascinating because we didn't do that. But some families do that. They throw things, they yell, right? And if we don't understand that why they do that or how that comes about, that tends to be the way that we respond to those things as well, right? My parents are looking at me. We did throw things. I shouldn't say we didn't throw things because we did. that's, I'm guessing, what their smile was about. I threw things, so that's probably more what it was. Anyway, so just I'm remembering fond memories of me throwing things. All right, so... Right, some families do that, and that's it. Kind of gets repeated in future generations. Other families are just they and nothing comes out. Right, we get hurt, we lose something, something happens, and we just close our mouths. We don't talk about it. And there's a lot of families that do that as well. And if we don't understand why we do that or how we do that in our family history, we tend to repeat that into our families moving forward. And so, repeating the past gets repeated if we don't remember the past and don't look back into it. The third thing I want to just kind of keep in mind as we work through this morning is that grief, remembering is a part of our grieving. Right? As difficult as it is to stop and to look back and to say, this is who it was, who he was, who she was, and what they did for my life, or the loss and the hurt that I feel, as difficult as that is, part of the grieving process is to remember. It's to remember who they were, what they've done for us, the life that they lived. And there's healing and there's power in that. And that's what we're going to look at this morning, is that remembering process and the three different elements of how that looks, especially in terms of a particular character and a particular situation in the Old Testament. And so if you have your Bibles, you have a Bible app, pull out your phones and pull out a Bible app, that's fine. We're going to go to 2 Samuel chapter 1. And 2 Samuel, the book of 2 Samuel, is the story of how King David, and most of us know who King David is, slew Goliath, the second king of Israel. His story is in 2 Samuel as far as him becoming king, how he became king, what he did as king. 1 Samuel is more about Saul, the first king of Israel, Saul, and the things he did. A little bit about David's in there, David and Goliath is in there, and some of those kind of stories, but most of David's story as king, or all of David's stories king, is in 2 Samuel. And so to start off, we're going to look at this man, David, and what his response to the circumstances that he finds himself in. And one of the things that David does so well, he may have not have made all the moral choices. If you know David's story of the adultery and the stealing a wife and murdering the husband and all these kind of things that he did, morally he wasn't always perfect. Just like any of us, he wasn't ever always perfect. But one thing David did really well was he expressed himself. If you read through the Psalms, most of the Psalms are written by David. He expresses himself so well, and he gets to the heart of how he feels, and he can share that with others. A lot of it's in poems and songs, but he is attuned to it. And I think that aspect of his life is why God says that he was a man after his own, or why he's called a man after God's own heart, which is David, a title that David's been given. And so we're going to look at a psalm, or kind of a psalm, more of a lament, but of what David expresses. And the reason that we're in 2 Samuel, because we're in 2 Samuel, something obviously had to happen to the first king. And so as we begin 2 Samuel chapter 1, we have Saul, King Saul, has been killed. Not really killed, more committing suicide because the enemy was coming and he didn't want the enemy to kill him, so he killed himself. So Saul is dead. King Saul is dead. But so is his son Jonathan and several other military leaders and other leaders of the country. And so in 2 Samuel chapter 1, we see David hearing this response. And so if you've got verse 11 and 12 there, this is David's response to hearing about King Saul's death and his son Jonathan's death as well. He says, David took hold of his clothes and he tore them. And so did all of the men who were with him. And they mourned and they wept and they fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord, and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. And so we see the expression, right? David's probably on a military in a military camp, or doing something, or maybe even getting away from Saul at this point, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But There's clearly a distraught experience that David has here. Him and those that were with him, they tear their clothes, right? That's pretty expressive. They mourn and they weep, they fast, and they do that for the entire day. And they experience and express their hurt. And when we think about the experience that David had with these two men, why he would experience this, we understand, if you know the story of David and Jonathan, we can probably understand. They were good friends, right? They were BFFs, right? We understand someone being hurt and being distraught over losing someone that's a best friend, right? We understand that part of it. But David didn't, we don't really know how David maybe felt about Saul, but Saul hated David. Right, to the point that Saul was trying to kill David over and over and over again, chasing him around and trying to get him. And multiple times, just barely, David escapes him just barely. And so we can understand why David feels remorse and distraught over Jonathan, but why King Saul? And really, it wasn't about Saul. We don't know for sure how David felt about Saul in particular, but he had such a high opinion and honor for the title of king. Right, just as we would maybe have a high honor and respect for something, and I have a hard time coming up with one because you can't say president because that's there's a lot of people who don't have a high opinion of the title president, but what is there something that we have a high respect, just the title, regardless of who holds it, we respect the title, we respect the position, and that's how David felt about the king. He may not have cared about Saul, he may not have liked Saul even, but he respected that title of king, and so when the king dies, he is distraught and remorseful for that. And to the point that as we read through the rest of this book, or the rest of this chapter of 2 Samuel, we see the expression that he has and the feeling and the pain that he has. And I think it's important for us to remember that and to know that for ourselves because we're not very expressive, right? We don't express how we feel a lot of times. You know, maybe we even feel a little guilty if we cry for, too long, or if we, feel like we're not getting over something for, after a certain amount of time, right? We hold it in, we keep it in, and in the Western world, that's how we are. The East is still pretty expressive. But that's such a negative thing in our culture, in so many ways, to not express ourselves. And I'm not going to stand up here and expect that we change the culture by any means. You know, I don't expect us to tear our clothes if we lose somebody or something bad happens. You know, as much as when the Vikings lost in this championship game last year, I almost tore things off my body. No, I didn't. But, those are the things we get distraught over, too, is the problem. But we don't express ourselves, and I don't expect us to tear our clothes off or put ash on our head like they do. They actually had professional grievers or mourners. I got to thinking that would be a really kind of a cool job, right? Because all you have to do is show up and cry. I mean, I wouldn't be very good at that, but some of you guys might be better at that. I don't know. I would be great if there was a professional complainer. I would do great at that job. I can whine and complain with the best of them. And I may not say it, but it's in my head, I promise you. Some of you might be great at a professional mourner. And I'm not saying we need to express ourselves as much outwardly, as much as we need to share what we're feeling, right? Express how we're dealing with stuff on the inside, and especially guys, right? We have the hardest time with this because culture does not allow us to do this, right? We can express anger and we can express anger, right? That's about what we can express socially acceptably, right? And so, but David is just so expressive in this, and I just think that's such an important part. That as we grieve, as we remember, that we allow ourselves that opportunity. So I said enough about that. Let's move on. Let's jump into what David says here. We're going to start in verse 19 in just a second. But I want to just point out, this is basically a eulogy. David is expressing this what he's feeling inside about this loss of Saul and Jonathan and these others. And really what's kind of cool is that not only does he express it and he want to share that, he wants everybody else to do it as well. It says in verse 18, and we don't have this on the screen, but in verse 18 it says, he wants this to be taught to everybody. Everybody that he's in charge of, everybody that's under him, is going to learn this. And I think that's just such a cool part of the expression of his pain. All right, so in verse 19, this is what he says. He says, "Your glory, O Israel, is slain in the high places, how the mighty have fallen." He says, "Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised exult." And Gath and Ashkelon are cities that are Philistine cities. They're the cities of the arch enemy Philistines. They're the ones that have actually killed Saul and Jonathan. And so you can hear his anger. You can hear his frustration that these people have done this. And he doesn't want them to exalt. He doesn't want them to rejoice over this. There's an anger. There's a frustration. There's a hurt there. He goes on and he says, "You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew or rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil." And the Mount of Gilboa is where Jonathan and Saul were killed. And again, this idea of anger and frustration coming out, he's cursing the land, right? He's cursing it, saying, "I don't want any rain to fall, and I don't want anything to come onto that land to grow and produce an offering in that land." And he's expressing that anger and that pain and that hurt in that way. Verse 22, he says, "For the blood, from the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely in the life and in death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions." And again, we move from the anger and the frustration to praising these people, to lifting them up, to saying they are stronger. Jonathan and Saul, they're stronger than lions. They're swifter than eagles. Giving almost kind of a thanks. Look at you have done. Look at what you have accomplished. The people that the enemies that they have defeated. Giving thanks for the things that Jonathan and Saul have done, and lifting them up a little bit, honoring them in a particular way. He does that even more in verse 24. He says, "You daughters of Israel, weep for Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan lies slain on your high places." And again, he's calling these women, these daughters, these women to lift up Saul. Remember what he has done for you, right? He clothed you in scarlet. He put ornaments of gold on your apparel. He's provided so much for you. And remember that. Be thankful for that. Rejoice in that. Lift them up in your memory of them. And he concludes with this. He says, "I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war perished." David and Jonathan had the original bromance. I mean, I just think that's such a cool image of these two men just cared so much about each other. In a culture, especially while I was growing up, how that was such a negative thing. If you had a close male friend, how there was whispers and there was talk because of all these different homophobic things and things in our culture. I read an article in Time magazine recently that intimate male friendships are actually becoming more socially acceptable, which I think is great, right? To be able to separate out some of the fear that we have, to be able to have those relationships. In fact, I found it interesting. They did a study of these students at a university or across universities, and students reported that they feel less judged by a close male friend than by their girlfriends, which I think that's great. You feel less judged in that way. Actually, there was a student, one male student, particularly talking about his friend Tim. He says, "Tim knows that I love Taylor Swift and Beyonce, but I keep that quiet from my girlfriend because she would judge me. I feel like I have to be more manly around her." And I just think that's great that you can have that relationship. I feel like there's something wrong maybe with the boyfriend-girlfriend relationship maybe there, but that we have those relationships, and that's what Jonathan and David had. They had that BFF, that bromance relationship that I just think is so important for us to acknowledge. But they had a relationship where David was just so broken over the loss of his friend. And their relationship, again, was so close that it makes so much sense that Jonathan would mourn for him. But also listening to the high praise that David had for Saul and the things that Saul did, even though Saul tried to do so much to hurt David as well. And so what I wish I had more time to break this down and to talk about this, but you just can see and hear in David's words this pain, this lament, this hurt that he's experiencing, and the expression that he had of it. And again, in memorials, sometimes we just want to push away those feelings, right? I actually read a few articles, and these were from veterans who had experienced different things, lost in different ways on the in battle and different things, and they wrote about how Memorial Day was just so hard. Memorial Day was just a difficult time. They almost had to just kind of get through it because then they were forced to remember. They were forced to be reminded of the things going on. They were forced to go through that and deal with that. But I would argue that is so valuable. I would argue that that is so valuable to be able to work through that grief, to remember, to spend time, to reflect on it, be able to work through that grief to be able to move forward well. In fact, there are five things that I kind of copied from somebody else and adapted to my own our context here that I think would help in this process. And being like David and hearing what David has to say, being able to respond that way to the loss that we had as well. And the first thing I just encourage you over the next day or two or this week is the first thing is wear a poppy, which is kind of a weird thing to do, maybe. But there's a history on Memorial Day to wear a poppy, to wear some kind of a flower in remembrance of those that have been lost. And I don't know if it's done around here much. It is. Okay, great. And so do that. Grab one of those, hang out, and spend that. Remember someone that you've lost in that way. And if it's not a poppy, maybe it's something of theirs, a ring. If it's a spouse or something like that, or a piece of clothing, put something in your pocket so that when you reach in and when you experience that, you remember that person. A purposeful reminder of who they are and what they've done for you. The second thing is there's a national moment of remembrance at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, there's a national moment of remembrance that I just encourage you to stop at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon and remember whoever it is that you need to remember. And I just think there's power in remembering and knowing that there are millions of other people around this country that are stopping to do that as well, that we are praying together, that we are in that moment together. The third thing is I, and this is part of what we do here in this town, is celebrate the Memorial Day. I call it celebration. Celebration is maybe not the right word for some people. But attend the memorial service tomorrow, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning here in the town park. Be a part of that. And even if you've never lost anyone in the military or don't know anyone too much from the military, there are obviously several here this morning, but spend that time remembering whoever we need to remember. And experience that. The next thing I want to encourage you to do, and a lot of you probably have even already done this, is visit and decorate a loved one's grave. And what I want to encourage, and we do this a lot of times, and this is just my outsider perspective, we bring the flowers, maybe we bring the flag, and we stop, and we put it on the grave, or set it out and make it look nice, and we stop, and we're quiet, and we're reflective. Which is fine, which is great, we can do that for sure. But I think there's value in going out to there and spending some time and talking about what we're thinking. Just bring somebody with you. Bring a sibling or a friend or someone. Bring them with you. Stop, and you can tell stories. Stories are great, but really experience and express, it really hurts that they're gone, right? It may have been a year. It may have been 10 years, but really I still feel a lot of pain. Being able to share that and express that, which goes to the last one I want to just encourage you to do, is share a story. Tell a story. And stories are awesome. I love stories. If you have a story of a loved one that you want to remember, pass it on to me. Send me an email. Talk to me. Let me know. I love stories. But really talk about the experience that you have, and especially in those things that we talked about, being thankful. What have they done for us? How have they provided for us? Not being thankful, but also what David did is honor them, right? Nobody's perfect, right? That loved one that you lost isn't perfect. They did probably some really terrible things in lots of different ways, right? But don't focus on those as much as focus on what the wonderful things they did for you and the things that they left for you as well. And if you're artistic and you can write a poem like David's that has lasted for 3,000 years that we still have in front of us today, which is really, really cool. Yours might not last 3,000 years. I don't know. Hopefully it does. But or even if you're not poetic, write out some of the experiences and the pain and the loss that you have with that. And so as we close, as we reminded, I just encourage you to take a step with that this week. But ultimately, I want us just to remember the importance of remembering in our grief. It's hard and it's difficult and it's challenging. And we don't often want to do it. But we can often be more thankful. We often then we don't end up repeating the same things that we had in the past or what has happened in the past. And we also can just grieve well in those things. So my prayer is that we move forward and we do that well. The next day, the next 2 days, the next week. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we just thank you so much that we can remember you, that we can remember what you have done, that we can remember the cross ultimately and first and foremost in our life. But we also are just asking that you help us to grieve well, that when we remember that loved one, when we remember that loss, when we remember that hurt, that we can move past it, not because we're ignoring it, not because we push it to the side, not because we get busy with work and doing other things, but that we can grieve well. Help us to process and to grieve well. We pray this all in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen. All right, worship team can come on forward. And we're going to go ahead and stand. Our closing song is When the Roll Is Called Up Yonder, but just an opportunity. Again, the floor is always open when we sing this invitation song for anyone to make any kind of decision. But if this morning you especially need prayer, what I'm going to do is I'm not going to be in the back this morning as we leave. I'll be up here for a few minutes. If you want to pray with me, you can come up now. You can come up afterwards. I want to pray for you as we remember, as we grieve well this week. But just want to offer that blessing to you as well. So let's sing as we conclude this morning's service.